This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. The intersection between politicians and music is long, and it's muddled. Frankie Sullivan from Survivor was ticked off that Mike Huckabee and same-sex marriage opponent Kim Davis used Eye of the Tiger at rallies.
And some Springsteen fans were vocally unhappy when the boss talked politics back at a John Kerry presidential campaign rally. Add to the list of disgruntled musicians R.E.M., the Talking Heads, Neil Young. But who's got the law on their side, the musicians or the politicians?
Here to talk us through it is David Graham. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start off with the boss. Now, a lot of love has come to Bruce Springsteen from politicians, from Chris Christie, John Kerry, and Reagan advisor George Will.
That's right.
So now that song, it seems like kind of a Rorschach blot. What kinds of different things do people hear in it, depending on their political persuasion?
Yeah, well, you know, Springsteen's song, I think, if you read the lyrics, is fairly clearly a kind of bitter rumination on the plight of the working class in the mid-'80s. You know, complaining about a working guy can't get ahead, even if he's born in the USA. But you've got this great moment when George Will went to a Springsteen concert, apparently not paying attention to the lyrics very closely, and thought, oh, well, this is just great patriotic music. You know, he's really in the sort of Reagan-esque American spirit.
And Bruce Springsteen in particular has bounced back and forth. As you say, it was used there. Chris Christie, a big Bruce Springsteen fan, but not vice versa, I guess, always. How has the boss played out with different politicians then since then?
Yeah, I mean, Springsteen, I think, over the course of his career has gone from being somebody who wrote songs that were somewhat political to being really very involved in politics. So you saw him out playing a series of concerts in benefit of John Kerry in 2004, and he appeared at campaign events with Barack Obama during his campaigns, and so he's really become a political player. But it's interesting because he does have this appeal, really, that is not so much political, and I think a lot of folks were attracted to his music without thinking about the political connotations. So you get somebody like Chris Christie, who just loves Springsteen, really a Springsteen super fan, but doesn't really agree with him about many things political.
Now, more recently, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz used R.E.M. for their anti-Iran deal at a rally in Washington. Here's a listen to that.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Now, what happened with that one?
So this is another case where, you know, R.E.M. actually, I saw R.E.M. playing on the same tour with Springsteen in 2004. You know, they're a fairly liberal band politically, but Trump and Cruz used this the song at their anti-Iran deal rally, and R.E.M. struck back. They tweeted and issued a statement saying, you know, we don't approve of this, we disagree politically, but also saying, you know, we should focus on more important things than our politics, I guess.
And Michael Stipe of R.E.M. got pretty saucy with his response. We can't actually read it on the air without getting fined substantially. But is it common for musicians to be that outspoken when their songs get used by a politician with whom they don't agree?
I think we get a few of these every election cycle. Stipe's maybe is a little bit more on the extreme side of things. But, you know, Neil Young was pretty saucy when Donald Trump used Rockin' in the Free World. David Byrne sued Charlie Crist, who was then the governor of Florida, for using a song of his without permission. Jackson Brown condemned John McCain for using a song. So you get these things every now and then, almost always a case of a Republican politician using something and a liberal-leaning musician getting upset about it.
So who's got the right of way on this, David? Is it the politicians or is it the musician who created that music?
So the rules were a little bit vague, and it's tough to tell. Here's the general rule. If the people playing the song have a license from ASCAP or BMI, the major licensing organizations to play recorded music, which most, say, convention centers do, they're probably in the clear. You know, they've bought the right to this music, and the musicians can object, and they can make a stir about it and try to convince the politician that it's not worth the trouble. But legally, it's in the clear. Now, there are gradations. So, like, if a politician starts using a song so much that it starts to be viewed as their theme song, then the artist tends to have more rights, and they can say, your repeated use of this song implies that I have endorsed you, I disagree, and I want you to cease and desist. In that case, there could potentially be a successful lawsuit, although you don't often get a situation where that actually goes to a suit. Usually the politician will just quit using the song.
Talking to David Graham from The Atlantic about music and politics. So what happens when a candidate, say a presidential candidate, uses a song that the musician didn't want them to use? Maybe they disagree, and the kerfluffle that can come out of that sort of thing. So, David, yeah, you mentioned a lot of times the politician will just drop it, because one story a politician doesn't want to read about themselves in the media is some argument over their use of music. David?
Musician bashing you in the press, and you just don't want to be distracted from the everyday business of politics, I guess.
Well, and part of your argument about this whole thing is that once the song is born, that is, a musician creates it and releases it out to the world, that maybe it sort of belongs to everybody, and the musician shouldn't be sort of sitting on the shoulder of the song trying to say when it can and cannot be used.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question for an artist. You know, on the one hand, I understand where they're coming from. They have strong views, and they tend to come at these things from a perspective, and it's their baby. On the other hand, you know, at some point you have to let go and give those rights up. I think it's an interesting case because you get a division between a song like "It's the End of the World as We Know It," which doesn't, to me, have any particular meaning or political connotation, versus a song like "Rockin' in the Free World" by Neil Young, which is really a pretty angry song about the state of things in the late '80s, and I think and you know, implicitly blasts George H.W. Bush. That's a case where if a politician who disagrees with Neil Young uses the song, it tends to make the politician look kind of dumb. And I in that case, I say, if I was an artist, I would want to, you know, give him enough rope and let them take it from there.
Well, all the songs we're talking about, and you point this out in your piece, of Born in the USA, Eye of the Tiger, Rockin' in the Free World, these haven't seen the light of a Billboard chart in a few decades. So what does that tell us, that these fights are mostly over older songs?
Yeah, you would think that the people in charge of programming music could find some interesting anthemic songs from more recently that would do the trick. Maybe what this tells us is that most voters tend toward the aging end of the scale. Boomers are a very important ad demographic and voter demographic compared to millennials, and so those are the people you want to play music for.
And you talked about this just a little bit earlier, and you said that most of this is the more liberal-leaning politics of musicians clashing with more conservative politics of politicians. Does it ever go the other direction?
You know, I tried to find a good example of one that goes the other way, and there aren't a great deal. You do get conservative musicians, and I think the two most prominent examples in recent years are Kid Rock, who appeared at Romney events and whose song became a Romney theme, and Ted Nugent, who's spoken on behalf of several Republican candidates for office. But I think the thing is that Democratic politicians don't really feel any need to play Ted Nugent. There's no cultural signifier that goes the same way. And they're kind of pigeonholed musicians, I think, because of their views, particularly Nugent. Whereas someone like R.E.M. has pretty wide appeal, and people don't think of R.E.M. as a political band with any particular cultural baggage.
It just popped into my head. I remember hearing an interview with Randy Bachman of Bachman Turner Overdrive, Canadian musician. Al Gore used his song "You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet," which content-wise is a little weird for a presidential campaign. But Randy Bachman said, "I object to them using it, not because I disagree. I would vote for Gore, maybe," he said, "if I were American, but because I'm not getting my royalties on this." So does a musician actually get royalties every time a politician plays their song?
So in theory, they should be getting royalties from ASCAP or BMI, from these licensing agreements. You know, a venue or a campaign or whomever can buy a license to use recorded music, and then it's basically a bulk license, and then from there the royalties should be going to the artist. What you get is sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes agreements don't happen. In the case of a battle between David Byrne of Talking Heads and Charlie Crist a few years ago, Crist had used the music in a video and just had never paid for it. And what Byrne said was that he discovered in the course of sort of pursuing this that this is really frequent. All the time politicians are using music in videos and not paying for it. And it was just that he had the wherewithal and the energy to go after Crist for it.
Now, going back to Chris Christie from New Jersey, he was, as you said, the super fan of Bruce Springsteen, also from New Jersey, but Springsteen not so much on board with Christie's politics. And it sounds like Christie sort of defected a little, turned to somebody else. He turned to Bon Jovi, which is an interesting case point in politics and music. What happened?
So, yeah, I mean, Chris Christie just loves Springsteen. He's talked about this over the years. He gave a long interview to my colleague Jeffrey Goldberg for a story about, you know, why he loves Springsteen and what his favorite Springsteen songs were. Recently, somebody turned up old posts from web forums where he was writing about Springsteen shows. But Springsteen has little time for Christie and just disagrees with him on many issues. It's right, Christie has started using songs by Bon Jovi, who is also a prominent New Jersey musician. He's also a Democrat, but he's friends with Chris Christie, and in a statement about this, he said, "My friendships are apolitical," which is an interesting viewpoint.
Do you think we'll see more of that in the election?
More of the apolitical thing, or more
right, musicians being a little more accommodating, because we're getting into the thick of it. More of that music's going to be out there.
Oh, I suspect it'll actually get more frequent. You know, as we get into it and more people are paying attention and the lines are drawn, I think musicians are going to be even touchier about this and they'll be paying closer attention.
David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
David Graham is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news. He was previously politics editor at The Atlantic and a reporter for Newsweek. He was talking with us there about what happens when musicians object to politicians using their songs on the campaign trail.